something on the surface. Well, it kind of makes me nervous. So say that you deserve this, and what kind of God would serve this? We will cure this dirty old disease. Well, if you got the poison, then I got the remedy. The remedy is that experience. This is a dangerous liaison. I says the comedy. Is that a serious? This is a strange and new play on words. I said the tragedy is how you're gonna spend the rest of your nights with the light on. So shine the light on all of your friends. When it all amounts to nothing in the end, I won't worry my life away.
Oh man, that song. There's some significance there. That, well, I guess it's kind of the start of the story. So, let's see. For the past couple of months, I've been talking with some friends that I work on things with about working on this short film together. And a friend of mine who is, he had a fall in college and now he's paralyzed and he speaks through an iPad, and he recently started doing stand-up. His name is Tom, and he was the first person that I ever told about the molestation, and it, like, you know, he totally made me realize that it was possible to talk to people about this and they would still like me. And it changed everything. And so he recently started doing stand-up, and he's really funny. And I was talking to my friends, my friend Alec, who runs a production company, and we basically were talking about how this is like an epic concept for a short film. And I pitched the idea to Tom because he reached out to me saying, like, he texted asking if I would be interested in doing like a Bainbridge Boys comedy show. And I was like, absolutely. And then we were sort of planning this out and trying to figure out how best to do it. And things started moving really fast. All of a sudden it was like 3 weeks out and we were like booking plane tickets and planning shot lists and getting ready to shoot this short film that it seemed like we had just come up with the idea for, like, you know, a couple of weeks before. And we were going to call it Traumedy. And so we would tell our stories, have clips of us doing stand-up, how it all relates, how we're using comedy to process our trauma. And so it was probably 2 weeks out, like right before we actually got our plane tickets home. And I started having these feelings of the way that it felt was, it was like shrinking, like as if somehow what was about to happen was going to be dangerous. Or not like dangerous, like I'm going to get attacked, but dangerous, like I'm not ready. I'm not prepared enough to shoot this short film. We're not prepared enough. Somehow this isn't going to work out. And the physical feelings associated with this shrinking feeling, it was like a constricting, like almost like curling up into like the fetal position, and you know, is this tension, and it didn't feel good. And I noticed that whenever I would think about not doing the short film, I would, like, on one hand, I could imagine how nice it would be, because it wasn't that I didn't want to do it, I just felt like we weren't ready. And so it was like, oh, we could just delay it, you know, we could just put it off a little while until we're ready, whatever that means. And it was just interesting feeling like the feelings of constriction associated with saying no, and when I would consider saying, like, just going with it. You know, like, things were happening so fast because there were all these amazing, like, cooperative components, different people, you know, saying yes. This guy, Joe Rogers, who runs Comedy and Kidsap, was basically saying, yeah, you guys can film at these open mics and do whatever you need to do to get the shots. And so there were a lot of people saying yes, and the only no that I was getting was in my head. And so it was like, how am I going to shut down all of these yeses from all of these people who are supporting what we want to do because of a fear of not being ready? Like, it didn't feel good to consider saying no. I guess on one hand, I felt like some hypothetical relief, but really the feeling was like, it was like scared. And as I would go along with things, you know, I would feel ease. And I mean, it felt flowy because you were going with the flow. There's an obvious direction that things are flowing towards. And the only thing that was scary about it was that it was a new experience, and that, you know, there was a lot of things that I had to consider. But really, you don't have to consider all of the things that your brain takes into account. You actually don't have to consider anything that your brain pops in. Even if your brain is saying it actively to you, you're not ready. This is going to fail. Everyone's going to hate you. You suck. Even if that is the active thought that's going on in your brain, you don't have to assign any weight to it. And that awareness of what your brain is saying without assigning weight is, it feels very much like the opposite of the panic that your brain gets into. It's like, you know, recognizing it for what it is, which is your brain trying to keep you in a place that it knows is safe, which is the known space. Let's take more time to take everything into consideration. Not, we can't just go with it. Look, all these things could go wrong. You know how many things could go right? I mean, it's essentially just denying reality too, because there are all of these things going right. But your brain just, the unknown is scary, and so it tries to shut it down. And in that way, it's almost like that's exactly where you should be going. The places that your brain tells you it's scary, too scary to go to, where it might be dangerous. I mean, not like literal danger. Don't go down, you know, a dark alley or whatever. But if you can watch what your brain is saying and realize that essentially what it is worried about is embarrassment, get in there. That is the exact space that you belong. And you can every time you go in there, the part of your brain that is afraid of embarrassment loosens its grip on your mind and your being. And you can more easily recognize that there's no danger in embarrassment other than what you think. And what I found out from this experience is that what you sacrifice by not doing things because of embarrassment is essentially like expansion into who you're meant to be. So anyway, I just kind of kept saying yes, and it felt, but I kept saying yes, and things kept coming together, and it was working out great. And then we had all of our flights booked, and it was a little bit later, and Joe reached out to me. And he said that he was having a show, a comedy show, and it was 2 days after we were going to be done filming. And he said, that I could headline the show if I wanted to. And I've never headlined before. So, like, it was, you know, I guess it was the exact same thought process as what was happening with the film, where I was thinking, like, okay, here comes this experience that I haven't had before, and I can think of 1 million fucking billion reasons why I shouldn't do this, and they are all rooted in fear. And that, you know, I think because I had started going with the flow of the film, when I saw the constricting, it felt the constricting feelings come in with regards to doing this headlining show, it was easier to see them for what they were and realize, like, maybe I'm being given this opportunity because I am ready. Maybe I'm not being given this opportunity because it's here for me to shut it down. Sometimes we are meant to say no. But the feelings associated and our awareness of these feelings and thoughts, and, you know, that's the real indicator. Because if like I'm gonna do stand up forever. And I was literally like a month ago thinking to myself, I wanna headline shows. I wanna be able to go anywhere in the world and sell out a show. And here comes the opportunity, the first headlining opportunity. And my brain's like, dude, you're not only are you not ready, you're not even close to ready. And then once you see that, it's like, well, wait a second. This is what I want. And I'm not going to keep shutting down what I want, opportunities to experience what I want to experience out of fear of not being ready to experience them. Because if you give into that fear, who's to say you'll ever do what you want to do? Because maybe that fear will always be there until you do the thing that you're afraid to do and figure out that there's nothing to be afraid of. And in that way, it's like, wow, every time you feel afraid of embarrassment, like, that is exactly where you go, because that's the opportunity to expand and grow. So I was debating back and forth for a while, and eventually I was just like, I was sitting at dinner with Galen, and I was like, I had crafted out my response, and I was like, all right, dude, like, I think I'm going to do it. I think I'm going to do it. And the feeling with of just, oh man, it felt good to not shut it down. It felt like growth, and growth feels good. Maybe not always, but in this instance, it felt great. So I responded, yes, I'll do it. I'll be there. And I asked him how much time he'd like me to do. Because that was part of it, is I assumed that it was going to be a lot of time. And I said, yes, I can do it. How much time? And then we left dinner, and we were going to pick up Alex's camera, which I'm filming on. I'm testing this out. This is a Blackmagic camera. I've been trying to find the right camera to record the podcast with. And so we were going to pick up this camera because he had a bunch of gear that he was bringing back to Seattle to film. And I was going to bring that with me because I had room. So we got to Alex's place, and I was telling him about how I had just committed to doing this headlining gig. And I was saying how I was like nervous too, because, you know, I'm headlining, and I haven't even done stand-up in Seattle yet. I'll get into why I haven't done that in a bit. But he did this thing where he was like, dude, if you just... Because I was telling him how good it felt to just say yes, and even though I was nervous. And he was like, yeah, dude, if you just keep going with those opportunities, you're gonna... And he did this motion of like, almost like taking flight, but just expand. It was an expansive act out, and it just made me feel like, yeah, dude, like it's time. I've spent so much of my life blocking out opportunities because of hypothetical outcomes. And even if you like extrapolate to the worst case scenario of these embarrassing outcomes, like if I have this headlining gig and I bomb the whole time, everything's still okay. I've bombed many, many, many times. And here I am. Really, like bombing, you grow a lot from the bombing experiences because, like this other stuff, you realize, oh shit, there's nothing to be afraid of. So anyway, I was feeling really good about saying yes to Joe and Alec and Galen encouraging me. And then Joe, when I got back to the car after Alec's place, I looked and he had responded and he said, can you do 30? Or no, he didn't say can you. He just said 30 to 35 minutes for the set length. And I saw that and I was like, wow. Well, because the longest set I had done up until this point was 15 minutes. So just go ahead and double that. Fuck. But what was so interesting was I saw that message and I actually didn't feel worried about it because I was feeling like, this is here because you're ready. All of this is happening because you're ready. And just because I haven't done 30 minutes doesn't mean, like, I actually know that I have the material. I have, but I haven't, you know, crafted it in a way that is, that I can tell all, like, so much of my material. I haven't had this length of time to be able to, like, stretch out and really, you know, do that long of a set. And so what I felt was excitement about the opportunity instead of fear and regret about, you know, I mean, how easy it would have been to be like, oh man, can I just do 15? But it just, I don't know, even just saying yes to the show made it easier to say yes to the length of the set. And so I just kept going with it. And, I responded, sounds great. And we started driving back. And Galen was driving and I was looking at what song to play. And then I saw this song called The Remedy by Jason Mraz, which had come on like the week before. I hadn't listened to Jason Mraz in like a decade, but what a legend. And I saw the name of it. And then I was like, oh shit, the name of the place where the show is at is The Remedy. And I saw that and I was like, oh dude. And the title of this song is The Remedy parentheses I Won't Worry parentheses. And I was like, oh, come on dude, there's some immediate confirmation that this is exactly right. Like, I don't know. It just felt like an immediate universal yes. You're going to go do this show at The Remedy. You're going to do this film and you're not going to worry about it. Look what happens when you don't worry. And then I started listening to the song and looked at the lyrics. And dude, listen to this. Okay. The remedy is the experience. This is a dangerous liaison. I says the comedy is that it's serious, which is a strange enough new play on words. I say the tragedy is how you're going to spend the rest of your nights with the light on. So shine the light on all of your friends when it all amounts to nothing in the end. I won't worry my life away. Okay, so again, the name of the film is Tromedy. And here we have the lyrics. The comedy is that it's serious. The comedy of this whole existence is that this is a serious thing. Even though we have no idea how we got here or what happens after, it is super serious right now, and you need to survive, even though no matter how well you do that, you will die. It's like such a brilliant, beautiful, cosmic play that we're all partaking in, and yet the part of us that forgets that this is a play, I think, is the same part of us that wants to shut shit down. Because embarrassment, egoically, is like a version of death, because it's we're going to get kicked out of the tribe and then we're going to die. And in reality, it's like whether you die now or later, it's the same. And maybe we don't need to be afraid of death, because that apparent sequence of that apparent experience of nothingness is the only experience that we've all had before we got here. Nothing. So if it was nothing before and it's nothing after, maybe we don't need to be afraid of nothingness. Anyway, the remedy is the experience now. The remedy is what's actually happening. The comedy is that it's serious. And I say the tragedy is how you're going to spend the rest of your nights with the light on. The tragedy is how you're going to spending the nights with your light on is being afraid. And that's the tragedy. How is it that in this song, The Remedy, which is the name of the venue that I just moments before committed to doing the longest set I've ever done at, that's the name of the thing. And right in the lyrics are comedy and tragedy, which make traumedy. It was just one of those sequences that's like, woo, hello. I feel you. Me, us, all of us, you know, these forces that orchestrate everything that happens, that we are. It felt like a cosmic nod, a cosmic confirmation that this is the right direction. And when Galen and I were listening to this, we were like, oh, dude, this is, it's easy to not worry when you get these synchronistic nudges. And then I just felt, you know, like, I'm stoked. This is going to be great. You know, I felt so good about it. So then we went back and, let's see, I guess we flew out, I don't know, a few days later. And, I got back to Seattle a while earlier, 'cause we were all going to stay at my parents' place. Me, Alec, Rob, and Ryan, this was our filming crew, and I wanted to get ready, so flew into Seattle, got prepped, and then the guys flew in, and Tom met us at my parents' place for our first thing of filming, and right away, I was, like, so overwhelmed. I think it's just, like, maybe it was because we were at my parents' place, and I felt like there were these dynamic, like, oh, I need to, like, host, you know, or what. I felt like there was a lot going on in my head that made me feel like I wasn't as present as I needed to be while we were filming. And I'm not sure, I don't know when this will come out, but this, well, somehow I'll show you the film and I'm not going to ruin it right now. But basically, over the course of our time filming, it was really, really stressful for the first 2 days. And I didn't really allocate time to sleep enough or have, like, time alone to meditate, to just chill. You know, it was very much like we were working all day, which was amazing. But I was feeling overwhelmed and I got really in my head about, like, fucking up certain things that we had been recording. So I was thinking about all of that. And then on the very last day, so on the very last day, we were at the courthouse where I went to trial. Tom and I both had to testify, and my parents, you know, where the trial happened. And I hadn't been back there since the trial happened. And I had been very nervous to do stand-up in Seattle, just anywhere in that area. And I think it was because there was part of me that was holding on to these ideas, or maybe just past feelings about what it was like the last time that I was there talking about molestation and how traumatizing that was. And maybe there was part of me that was holding on to some sort of childhood belief that bad things are going to happen as a result of me talking about this. So, you know, I've been doing stand-up for 5 years, and I just had never done it there. So we were in the courthouse parking lot, and we were filming some stuff, me talking about it. And right when we finished filming, we were packing up all of the stuff, and this lady came up to us, and she was like, "Hey, what are you guys filming?" And we told her, and I was like, "Yeah, you know, it's this mini documentary about my friend and I and traumedy and all this stuff, and I was molested when I was a kid." And she was like, "No way. I was molested too." And dude, this lady, her name was Marilyn, absolute psychedelic, trippy love radiator woman who had this groovy vibe, and it just totally came through in everything that she was saying, including what had happened to her. We ended up having this amazing conversation, and then about like 10 minutes into it, Alec was like, "Hey, I have to ask, is there any chance that you would be able or willing to do this, talk about this on camera?" And she kind of thought about it for a while, and then she was like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And so these guys, you know, Alec and Rob and Ryan are like such professionals. Like in an instant, they had like the whole setup. They found the right spot to do it. We're at a table next to the parking lot, and they got all the lighting and everything was good to go. And Marilyn and I proceeded to have this amazing, totally impromptu conversation about what happened to her. And it, like, she was 76, and she's just like, "Yeah, fuck it. I'll talk about this on camera with strangers," just because she was feeling good about it and going with the flow. I mean, we could have been like pranksters or some, you know, who knows? But she could feel it, that this was right. This felt good. And it was like this epic synchronistic encounter that made me feel again like, oh yeah, dude, like this is meant to happen. And there's things that are, you know, no matter how much I planned and thought about what this filming will all be like, I could have never planned for something like that. In the parking lot of the courthouse? And she was working at the building across the street, and just out of curiosity, "What are you guys up to?" 10 minutes later, she's filming a fucking part of a mini documentary about trauma. What a legend. I mean, it literally is like we were thinking about this after we finished filming, how like maybe people like probably like won't believe that we just bumped into this lady. Like she's too good to have just had this happen in a happenstance way. But it was just epic. And then, you know, when I did do stand up, we did two open mics that we recorded, and you know, just like with the film, just like with committing to the show, as soon as I did stand up there once, like all of the fear is lifted. You know, I on some level, I imagine my brain was like, "Dude, if, you know, you're gonna get molested again. Somehow, somebody in the audience is gonna fucking come after you if you do this." I don't know what I was afraid of, but just stepping in. It's the ultimate way to release whatever fear it is that you're experiencing. So it felt like, wow, it was, you know, a lot of intense changes and shifting was happening and growth. And we finished filming and the guys left, and I basically had one day after they left to get ready for this set. That my plan was to prep all week and I'd just be running the set after we would finish filming, but there was never a moment. And then, you know, the day came to do the show, and I, like, you know, my brain was just like, you are not ready for this. I was thinking about calling in sick, you know, just coming up with all these reasons why I can't do this. And then I just kept coming back to the same idea of, this is here because you're ready. And in the same way that you can't plan for something like, for someone like Marilyn to come along, you know, I know that I need to do this. And I know that I know how good it feels to move through, to go into the space of fear. And what's on the other side of it. And so Alec, I still had the black magic. And he was saying, like, dude, you got to film this because, you know, this is going to be, we might be able to use this, even though we rented this nice camera for the filming of Traumedy. He was like, you got to film it anyway, just in case we might use audio from it, etc. So I was trying to figure out what to do and how to film it. And I needed somebody to film. And I wasn't telling anyone about the headlining gig because I was like, all right, I don't want to, you know, doing it is one thing, but I can't just invite all these people, even though it would have been totally fine. There was part of me that was just like, let me do this first. Let me make sure I can headline first. And then I'll invite people to the next one. So I was talking to my dad and I was saying this stuff and he was like, well, why don't you just let me film? And I was like, you know, I was certainly not planning on letting my parents come, because I think that even though I know that there's no chance of them abandoning me or not loving me or all of these things that maybe I would be worried about from, I don't know, whoever is going to... As if my friends are going to come to the show and not be my friends anymore because I didn't tell funny enough jokes. It's all silly kind of when you say it out loud, but there was just part of me that had kind of decided I'm just going to do this. Yeah, I don't know. I had decided in my head that I wasn't going to tell anyone. I was going to do it, but I wasn't going to tell anyone. And then my dad just sort of started kind of making fun of me for like... Oh no, what if I bomb and my parents are there? Oh no, like, he just started kind of vocalizing my fears in a way that made me register that, yeah, like, this is another shrinking. It's another hiding from who I'm meant to be. It's another version of trying to keep me safe. And I guess I felt like, oh, well, I'm going to do the headlining gig. So that's enough. That's okay. We can cap the growth. We can cap the expansion there and then it'll be fine. We'll move on to the next one. But any opportunity to expand is an opportunity worth taking. Because what are we waiting for? There will always be a reason to not do things that we know will grow from. And any like reasoning that is advocating for you not doing something that you know that you need to do it's fear. And I guess I had enough instances of that week and prior to that. When my dad started making fun of me, I was like, oh shit, yeah, thanks. Almost forgot for a second that there is absolutely no worries. And I won't worry. I won't worry my life away. Hey. So I was like, okay, great. And I needed him to film, which was like a perfect thing. So my parents came and the show started and it was interesting because I was watching from the back and I don't know, it's always easy to panic. Panicking is probably the easiest thing to do. Well, no, the easiest thing to do is be at peace, because all you have to do is not do the things that make you panic. Thinking negatively about shit that could go wrong. So the easiest thing to do is nothing. Actually, panicking is doing something. It's putting energy into hypothetical negative situations. So, but anyway, when I was in the back of the show, I just started thinking. I wrote my whole set out, and I had this. I was trying to memorize shit while I was at the show, which at that point it's like, just let it go, you know. Just trust that things are gonna happen that you can't plan for, and that's sometimes the best stuff, like Marilyn. So eventually it got to my time to go up, and I went up, and it was epic. Like I felt like for the first time on stage, I could take all of the time that I wanted to. You know, normally on stage you're trying to, you know, hit certain time periods, and I just felt totally free to navigate, you know, however I wanted to. And even though things were going well in that regard, there were a number of moments where I was I did a few like new bits, and one of them just fucking absolutely bombed so hard. And it's funny in that moment because it feels like no matter what has happened before, it's like it, when in that moment of bomb, it feels like everyone is upset with you now. Like everyone has forgotten how you've been doing well and now just thinks that you should get off stage, which is not the case. And even if it is the case, who gives a fuck? Just keep going. So I definitely got in my head a number of times, and I remember like getting off stage. When I did eventually get off stage, I did about 27 minutes. So I ran short for sure, but it was close enough where I was like, ah, dude, I was happy. So I got off stage, and I went up to my parents. They were in the back, and I was kind of like, oh, also like while I was on stage, there were a number of people that were like really, really laughing hard and like cheering, and like, you know, there were, and one of them was way at the back right next to my parents, and I went over to them and her after, and she was just like so nice and complimentary and really made me feel good. And yet there was part of me that was just still looping about these things that hadn't landed. And it was almost like because of those instances, people feel bad for me or something. Like my brain is like blocking out compliments because it's hanging on to this moment of failure, quote unquote, that makes me feel unworthy of what's being said. And then that warps what's being said to like, oh, they're just saying this because they feel bad for you because you actually didn't do well. All this garbage, all garbage thoughts. And so I talked to my parents briefly, and then I started, I just sort of stayed for a little while after. My parents and I all drove together, and they were waiting in the car, and I was chatting with people after, and it was like, it was this amazing spread of reactions. It was kind of an older crowd too. And people were just being like so nice and really seemed to have like enjoyed the show. And I got paid and it was, I don't know. It felt like the more people I talked to, the harder it was to hang on to the idea that I didn't do enough or I didn't do well. And then by the time I left, I was feeling good. And then I got in the car, my parents and I were talking on the way back, and they were just like so stoked about the whole thing. And they told me of these elements of the show that I hadn't really registered, like about how people were really, really interested. Like there were laughs and I did well, but really it was like people were invested in what was being said. And I think it's maybe just because I've been doing the molestation material for like a long time now, where I forget about how absurd it is to have somebody get up and talk at you and tell molestation jokes for a long time and the impacts of that. And, you know, like it just felt like it was this continuous release of resistance to what actually is, that really just culminated in me just being like, oh, cool. Like, maybe not everything is what my brain immediately latches onto. And we got a great recording from the show. As soon as I got back, offloaded the footage and listened to it. And it was epic. It was excellent. It was like, I couldn't believe the amount of laughs that my brain just seemed to block out because of a few moments in a 27-minute set where there were apparent lulls. I remember one of the first things I said to my parents was like, wow, there were a lot of troughs in that wave of a show, of that wave of a set. But the reality is, like, a lot of the things that I'm talking about require setups that are not funny, and you get there. But because I have this idea in my head that if people aren't laughing the entire time, then somehow it's a bad show, is like literally just, it's not true. And it's also like, it's just not, it's not necessary. It's an unrealistic expectation. And it's also not, it's not bad to have silence the whole time, certainly, but the silence is sometimes essential, and it's not something we need to be afraid of. Maybe in the same way that nothingness isn't something that we need to be afraid of. I mean, if there wasn't silence, then I would just be talking the entire time without breathing. So, anyway, it was very cool to watch the set back and just have my worries be blown up. dissolved. Because your brain can only deny shit for so long. It can only panic for so long, and then you go do the thing that you're afraid to do, or you watch what you thought was bad, and then you realize it was great. And then when I'm watching this show, I'm like, oh shit, dude, I'm a headliner. I just had one of the best sets of my life, and it was the longest set of my life. And now I'm like, fuck it, dude, put me up. I'll do an hour. I don't even have an hour of material, but I will figure it out. It just felt amazing to feel like, I guess, the opposite of compression. Tightening, shrinking. It was this expansion that I would have never felt if I had listened to the fear. And now it just, I don't know, that that feeling has been, it was strong. It was strong that night. And then the next night, Alec, who had been home for 2 days, texted me saying, hey, I'm going to have a first draft of the film ready for you tonight. And I was like, what the fuck? This guy is like an absolute workhorse beast. And I was like, okay, great. And I was, you know, nervous to watch it, but he sent it over. And I was nervous, you know, for all of the moments that I thought I had fucked it up. You know, I didn't know what it was going to look like, yada, 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 yada. And he sent it over to me and I watched it. And dude, I mean, Alec is a total genius, like filmmaker, editor. It was amazing to watch and see what Alec and Rob and Ryan had been seeing the whole time that I was on screen with Tom, on camera with Tom and everyone. And it was basically, I think it was probably similar to, it was like watching as an audience member or, you know, as the creators of the film, but from a different perspective than the person who's like in the thing. And it was incredible to see the vision that they had for this film, that and how they knew it was going to look. And the things that I thought that I had fucked up were some of the best things that I said. And this was the same thing for the stand-up show, where there were moments that I fucked up in terms of following the exact script for what I was planning to say that made it sound even more real and natural, because it was. It was just what was happening in the moment, not a regurgitation. And it just, this really, you know, intense dissolving of worries and fear and things that really are just, I mean, it's funny because they are the illuminators of the path to our growth. So anytime you feel afraid, go within reason. And man, I can't wait for you guys to see this film, because it had me emotional. It had me feeling emotional in ways that I have not felt before. And I think part of what I was feeling was the recognition of how much good this can do for people. And you know, also sort of recognizing that even if I didn't know me or Tom, I would still feel really, really affected in the best way. So it was this, it was a lot of stuff going on, dude. But it just felt like every time I moved into what I was afraid to do, it worked out better than I could have imagined. And it just got easier. And even now, it's like, okay, if you feel fear, it doesn't mean you're not making progress. It just means there's more room to grow. And that's great, because it's an opportunity to feel even better than you already do. And yeah, I don't know, man. It was honestly one of the most, it was one of the coolest weeks of my life for sure. And there was so much happening. And it made me feel really excited about what's possible when you don't get in the way of yourself. Because there is an experience available where you don't spend any time dwelling. When the fear pops up, you just go straight through it. And how fun would that be? I mean, I thought about this today. I wrote it down because You know, sometimes I get in my head about saying, like, just texting people, like, just thinking that I'm going to somehow say the wrong thing. Like, I overthink texts a lot. And I think that that's because, I mean, it could just be a regular thing, but I also think that the trial exacerbated that in a way where I'm anticipating being questioned about things in a unnatural way, an unnatural extent. You know, if I say I'm busy, I'm anticipating questioning and then cross-examination and having to explain myself and all these things that aren't real anymore. But I think because the verdict was a hung jury, and Jim did not get convicted, I think there's part of me that felt like my truth was not enough. So now it's like I spend a lot of time trying to figure out the right way to say a thing, and I can't seem to figure it out because there is always a way that it could be misinterpreted. And I can't just say what really is because that didn't work. And this is something I'm, you know, actively working on. But it's interesting watching it manifest in terms of, like, you know, like I was crafting out a thank you note to Joe Rogers for all the help that he all everything that he did for us for the film and stuff. And I was I had written out this email to him and it was saying thank you. And then I had listed off all the things. Thank you for recording the audio, for letting us film, and for giving me the spot on the show. And of course, it's nice to acknowledge what people have done, but it's literally like I'm trying to hit all the things that they could possibly think, everything that they possibly did, so that there's no way that they could think, how could he not include this one specific example? It's shit like that that makes me think that it's related to the trial, because nobody operates like that other than in that environment. You know, whether I say thank you or thank you so much, Joe, you're the best person ever, will make no difference. Especially like when you when you know that your intention is just to say thank you. It doesn't really matter what you say. It's just about how you feel when you're saying it. So, you know, even this, I had this moment today where I was like, oh shit, dude, every time you start overthinking about what to say in a text message, that is an opportunity, just like the show, just like the film, everything, to just go with it. Just say your truth and watch the world, watch everything be okay. And maybe this will take a while, because there's a lot of momentum and fear built up, rooted in these potential misinterpretations. But as we continue to do it and feel the feelings, you know, associated with these fears, I'm sure there will come a point in time where the emotional momentum is gone. And you can just be in the world without needing to justify anything to anyone. And it felt good to, I mean, I was like giddy when I thought about this today, how every text, every single time that you feel anything negative, all of that is a chance to come back to what's real. And I think that that just comes back to, like, you know, separateness versus connectedness. You know, are you connected with everyone in a way that allows you to trust that what you say is right? Or are you isolated in a way where it feels like everyone is waiting for you to fuck up? waiting for you to say something wrong, like the defense attorney. There, gotcha. The contrast in feeling is intense. And it really feels amazing to come back and remember that it's all good, and it always has been. And even the things that cause us to panic, the origins of our fears are there for our growth. We don't have to be afraid of investigating those spaces, because those are the spaces that we must go into in order to let go of and to grow. So, yeah, it's funny. You know, I was kind of just planning on doing a little visual test with the Black Magic to see what this looked like, but here we are. And that's what happened recently. I got back 2 days ago. And yeah, it feels good. It feels like I'm excited for more opportunities to, and no matter what my reaction is, if I panic, it's a great opportunity to grow. And if I go with it, that's a great opportunity to grow. Everything is an opportunity to grow. So, I guess that was everything. Well, yeah. Fortunately, there is no time limit or restriction or anything. There's nothing. It's just, everything's fine. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And I hope that whatever it is that you're experiencing in life, I hope that you're moving through it knowing that it will be okay, and that no amount of fear is too much to overcome. And that it just keeps getting better and better and better and better and better. So yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for watching. And I will see you in the next one. Peace. I have this new recording device that lets me play music, so I'm going to have an outro. Yeah. Well, I heard two men talking on the radio. So good, dude. After this, the unavoidable kiss. Shout out to Jason Mraz, you fucking beast. Well, if you got the pose, then I got the remedy. The remedy is the experience. There's a dangerous liaison. I says the comedy is that it's serious. This is a strange enough new play on words. I said the tragedy is how you're gonna spend the rest of your nights with the light on. All of your friends, when it all amounts to nothing in the end.